Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to Psychic Teachers. I'm your host, Deb Bowen.
And I'm Samantha Faye.
And we are just delighted and honored that you are with us. Samantha and I are still going to be talking about weird and spooky things this week. I guess we just can't quite let go of that whole Halloween thing yet for some reason. But that's okay. It's going to be fun. So welcome. We're glad you're with us. If you are a regular listener to our show, you know that we typically begin with a crystal of the week and an animal of the week, and we're going to do that this week. Samantha, you ready to talk to them about your stone yet?
Sure. So the crystal I picked this week is turquoise, which is just a beautiful stone that you can find fairly easily, but you just want to make sure that you're buying it from a reputable dealer. A lot of people sell dyed howlite as turquoise. So just make sure if you do resonate with this stone that you get it from someone who is a true crystal connoisseur. I'm going to be quoting a little bit from Judy Hall here. Turquoise is an efficient healer. It provides solace for the spirit and well-being for the body. It is a protective stone and has been used for amulets since time immemorial. It is believed to change color to warn of danger of infidelity. Turquoise promotes spiritual attunement and enhances communication with the physical and spiritual worlds. When you place it on your third eye, it enhances intuition and meditation. If you place it on your throat chakra, it releases old wounds, inhibitions, and prohibitions and allows the soul to express itself once more. It helps you explore past lives and shows you how the creation of your fate is ongoing and depends on what you do at each moment. Turquoise is called a purification stone. It dispels negativity and clears electromagnetic smog, providing protection against pollutants in the environment. It helps to balance and align the chakras with the subtle bodies and attunes the physical level to the spiritual. In traditional thought, turquoise unites the earth and the sky, bringing together male and female energies. This stone is empathetic and balancing. A promoter of self-realization, it assists creative problem-solving and calms the nerves when speaking and in public. It's a stone of strength. It helps to dissolve that feeling of martyrdom or self-sabotage. It helps to instill inner calm while helping you still remain alert and focused. It's also good for people that suffer from mood swings where they feel happy one moment and angry the next, and it is said to help stimulate romantic love. It's also recommended for people who are just feeling exhausted by life. How do you like that?
I love that. Turquoise is such a versatile stone to me. And as we are talking, I am looking at a turquoise bear that lives on my computer. So I love turquoise. It's one of my favorite stones ever. Thank you for sharing that one tonight.
You know, I don't have a piece because I read years ago when I was studying all about crystals, I read in a couple of older crystal books that the Native Americans taught that it wasn't good luck to buy your own piece of turquoise, that you should be given a piece.
That's right.
So what I do, like, we have a really good shop here in town that sells beautiful heart-shaped turquoise beads with holes in them, and I make those into necklaces, and I'll give those as gifts a lot, because to receive a turquoise as a gift is considered good luck, but to buy your own piece is considered bad luck. And I know it's silly to believe in those superstitions, but you know how when you read something it just kind of stays with you?
Oh, I don't know that I think it's silly. I mean, I think there's something to some of that kind of stuff. And the turquoise bear I'm looking at was, in fact, a gift. I did not buy it. Well, I didn't realize you didn't have a piece of turquoise. We'll have to remedy that.
I know. I feel like I just, like, I didn't mean to say it like that. Like, no. Nobody needs to go get me a piece of turquoise. I just mean, like, that's the only reason why I don't have that stone to work with, because I read that. And I mean, I guess superstitions are there for a reason, but I always feel a little silly when I believe in them.
Well, you know, I've taught many a tarot course, and one of the things that I was always taught many years ago early on was you didn't buy your own deck. It had to be a gift, and it had to come unbidden. And if you were meant to read the cards would come to you. And I know that that is no longer the way the world sees things in this modern world of so many tarot and oracle decks. But when I learned to read tarot, that was the rule. So
yeah,
I think
and
it goes in
with you.
You sure did. It sure did.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for turquoise. Let me tell folks about our animal of the week, our four-legged person of the week. Since we're going to be talking about Denver International Airport, which is not in the mountains, the airport is out on the prairie. It's 25 miles east of Denver, actually. It's where the airport is physically located. And one of the most common four-legged people out on the prairie, of course, are prairie dogs. And I love prairie dogs. I know that there's a lot of controversy with farmers and ranchers about prairie dogs, and I get that. I understand it. But I think they are amazingly incredible people, and they are extremely bright, and they are extremely intuitive. And here are some interesting facts about prairie dogs, because they've been researched recently, particularly for in a really fascinating way. Prairie dogs have different sounds. They vocalize differently for different threats. So, for example, if a prairie dog is on guard duty in front of their network of homes and the prairie dog sees a hawk, the cry that a prairie dog has is different for hawk than it would be for eagle, for example. Prairie dogs can differentiate male and female humans. They can say, oops, here comes a male human, that might be threatening, or here comes a female human, that might be threatening. They can differentiate color. They can tell if whether or not you're wearing a red shirt or a blue shirt. And they have different vocalizations for all those different things. And it just goes on and on and on. They tunnel and they burrow in this amazing underground network of connecting homes, and they live together very communally. So they are communal creatures. They are extremely communicative creatures. They're extremely sensitive to vibrations in the earth, for example. So prairie dog medicine teaches us to be aware of our surroundings, to be collaborative, and to help others to know when to use our intuitive ability to know when there is potentially danger or something that our friends and families need to know about and to be protected from, and to live in harmony together, because they are very peaceful creatures as well. So there you have prairie dogs.
So cool,
isn't it?
You know, this is not about prairie dogs, but it's just a funny story about my guides and their personality. So I did a meditation last night to connect with my guides, and my main question was, you know, what do I need to know? You know, we're coming into a busy holiday season. Mercury's about to go retrograde in December, and I just wanted to know, like, you know, what are some things that I need to know? And of course, I was so tired last night, I fell asleep in the middle of the meditation. And I had a dream that I was walking down a city street, and there were like a gaggle of ducks behind me, and I was trying to get them in line, and they wouldn't get in line, and I was kept stopping to make them get in line. And so that was my guide's hilarious way of telling me I need to get my ducks in a row.
I love it when our guides have senses of humor. And you're right. I mean, you're right. We're coming up on a busy holiday season. Mercury is going retrograde. Yikes, yikes, yikes. And the moon was new last night, Saturday the 18th. The moon was new. And so this is a time of really setting your intentions for what you want the next few weeks, for example, to look like. And if your intentions are to have a peaceful, calm, and drama and stress-free holiday, today's the day to set that intention, or whatever your intention may be. But today's the day to do that. there
Perfect.
You go.
Thank you for mentioning that. Mm-hmm. Okay, so somebody sent me a little video clip about the Denver airport about a month ago, and I have been researching it and talking to Joel about it ever since because it's something I've never heard about. And I called Deb, and you know, you had heard about all of the conspiracy theories around this airport, and I said to you, if I haven't heard of it, I bet a lot of our listeners haven't either, because I consider myself pretty well read among freaky, weird, spooky stuff, because that's what I love. And I hadn't heard of the weird conspiracy theories around the Denver International Airport. So I said to Deb, can we do a show on this? And she said, absolutely. So what we are presenting to you tonight as part of our ongoing Unsolved Mysteries and Spooky Stuff series that we do from time to time is a show on the conspiracy theories behind the Denver International Airport. Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. Well, let me just tell you, I've been to DIA several times. I've flown in and out of Denver several times. And it is an amazing place. As I mentioned from a few minutes ago, it's out on the prairie. And when you are standing, well, when you approach the airport, maybe it's better to say it this way, when you're approaching the airport from the road, those tall peaks that almost look like canvas circus tents that make up the airport visually, make up the roof line of the airport, mirror the mountains behind it. It mirrors the, I forget the name of the range. That's just when we need Joel. But it mirrors the mountain range that is behind it. It also very much resembles First Peoples lodges, what you might want to call teepees, but please don't call them lodges. So it mirrors that as well. When you are standing in front of it, you are just dwarfed by the enormity of that roof line. And when you fly into it on a beautiful sunny day, you can see the air as you descend, you can see the roof line of the airport, and you can see that mirror of the mountain range behind it that are usually, and some of them, no matter what time of year you're there, are still snow-capped. So it is just a magnificent place from the outside. And inside, of course, it is mammoth. And that's where we're going now as we begin to talk about some of the pieces of the
conspiracy
puzzle.
Well, people are probably listening here going like, okay, what are they talking about? So I just want to give a rundown of the main conspiracies, and then we'll break it down. The weird thing about the Denver airport is that it never needed to be built. There was already a highly functioning, great international airport working fine, so that was strange. The theory around the airport is that it is built over a bunker that could possibly be used as an emergency place for, you know, the president and other heads of state to come in the event of a nuclear or other disaster. There's weirdnesses in terms of the artwork that depicts a nuclear holocaust that Deb and I are going to break down for you. There is a capstone built in the airport that says that they would like to thank the New World Commission, and nobody knows who that is. There's some weirdnesses around this crazy blue Mustang statue who's nicknamed Blucifer. So there's a lot of strange theories and conspiracies around this airport, and that's what we're going to try to break down for you all. What I found interesting is that it is so large. It's the largest airport in the United States by land area. It is 33,531 acres. The second largest is Dallas-Fort Worth, and that is second in line, and it's half the size of that land mass. I found that amazing. I mean, 33,000 acres, that's a lot of space. And like you said before, Deb, it's 25 miles outside of Denver, so it's not, you know, super convenient. Did you want to add something to the space of it? I know you had talked about that before.
Just that it is just breathtaking. And to get through DIA, to get to your gate and concourse takes a while. You don't go to DIA and plan to get on a plane in 30 minutes. That's not going to happen. It's huge. Yeah, it is.
The Stapleton International Airport, which was there before and was working just fine, is only 19 miles away. But for some reason, they felt as though they needed to do this. It started in 1980. They put 83 from 1980 to 1983, areas were set aside and investigated to build this airport. In 1989, $60 million was approved for construction. It opened in 1995, 16 months behind schedule, and $2 billion over budget. The total cost was over $4 billion to build this airport. And the weird thing is, nobody knows to this day where most of that money came from. It was not all taxpayer-funded. It was not all from Colorado. Nobody knows. The construction of the airport employed 11,000 workers. And I found this, as I continue talking, people, because you're probably going, okay, what the heck is she talking about? But just hang on to some of the weird details. Denver International Airport has the fastest Wi-Fi of any U.S. airport. I just found that interesting. Yep. The airport itself is more than twice the size of New York City.
Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
I read that somewhere. All of Manhattan.
Yep. That's pretty amazing. Okay. Well, I want to get to those dates later. Okay. Let's go to some of the weird stuff. Okay. So, so what happened? This is what the Denver International Airport people will tell you if you go on the tour. They built five buildings, and they didn't build them correctly. So rather than demolish them, they simply buried them underneath the airport. You can go online. You can see the blueprints for this stuff. You can see it's labeled DIA. So there are five buildings, five multi-storied buildings that were built underneath this airport. There's a series of tunnels that are underground as well. So that's the reason. So the reason why they said it went beyond 16 months was because they said they were trying to build one of the best conveyor systems for baggage handling, and it didn't work. So rather than just destroy it, they put it underground. And that's when a lot of people went, that's kind of weird. So one of the conspiracy theories is that this is an underground bunker meant to house the global elite in the event of a nuclear attack. And what's weird is when, I'm trying to find in my notes the name of the comet, some comet was supposed to hit us. And there was a comet in 2011 that was apparently going to hit the United States, and Obama was taken to Denver during that time, and luckily the comet never hit. And a lot of people were like, why Denver? And if some of you are listening to this going, okay, Samantha and Deb have really lost it, they need to come back to Earth, research the Greenbrier Hotel in Virginia, right outside of D.C. There were rumors for years that there was an underground bunker there, and everybody poo-pooed it, and the CIA finally came out and admitted it, and now you can tour it. But there were underground bunkers built during the Cold War for the politicians, you know, for the elite, so that if anything happened. You know what's weird too, Deb? Queen Elizabeth and several other heads of states in other countries have been secretly buying up property around Denver under aliases.
Now, where did you get that information?
I got that information, I have to look at on a website. I can't remember the name of it.
I'm not doubting you. It's just that just is a part of so much of the theory and the conspiracy stuff that it's really hard to know what to believe and what not to believe. And
well, why don't you tell them about why don't you tell them about the Blue Mustang?
Well, okay, let me get down to that in my notes then. Here, hang on, because that's a really kind of a sad story about the Mustang.
Yeah, it is
actually. Okay, so here we go.
It sits in front of the airport. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It does. It's actually up on one of the main, and I'm terrible. My Spanish is terrible. I'm so sorry, but I think it's pronounced Pena Boulevard, which is one of the primary access roads into the airport. And I'm working, this note comes from the Denver Post, from an article in the Denver Post. So this Mustang, this beautiful statue of this Mustang, was built by an artist whose name is Leo Tanguma. I think I'm pronouncing his name right. And this, so this Mustang weighs, is 32 feet high and weighs 9,000 pounds and has glowing red eyes, which some conspiracy theorists interpreted as references to the four horsemen of the apocalypse. Part of the horse, when it was under construction while it was being built, fell on its creator. No, I've got the name wrong. Ignore that, Tanguma. He did the murals.
The murals.
The man, right. The man who created the horse was Luis Jimenez. Oh, gosh, mm-hmm. I'm so sorry. My Spanish is terrible. But anyway, the horse fell on him and killed him. And so one theory, of course, is that this is, you know, the horse of the apocalypse. He said in an interview with him while the horse was in the process of being built and sculpted, was that his the glowing red eyes had to do with his father. He is an homage to his father who worked in neon. And he said he could have chosen any color for the horse's eyes. It didn't have to be red. He just chose red because it was such a contrast to the blue, to the blue. So that's, you know, you get the story, you get the conspiracy piece of it, the, oh, this is, you know, another weirdness. Here's somebody who was killed while his sculpture was being worked on. And then he says, yeah, but, you know, that was the history of it. So that's the horse.
Well, the sculpture fell on him. It actually fell on his leg and severed an artery in his leg in 2006, killing him almost instantly. That's kind of a weird accident to happen. If you Google it, it is a scary looking thing. I don't think it's a very welcoming thing for the Denver airport to have. I mean, it's giant. He's bright blue. I've never seen a blue horse. He has glowing red eyes. I've never seen a horse with red eyes. He's said to represent the fourth horseman of the apocalypse, which is death from the book of Revelations. Who knows? People have nicknamed him Lucifer. You know, it's kind of a creepy thing. If you go inside the airport, the artwork inside the airport is really creepy. There's gargoyles coming out of suitcases. There are four murals, and some of these have now been painted over because there was such controversy around it. Go ahead, Deb.
I was just going to say the gargoyles are near the baggage claim. And
yes.
And one of, you know, the counterpoint to the conspiracy theory is, gee, you know, gargoyles have been in use, practical use, for many, many, many centuries. And wouldn't it be kind of fun to have them coming out of suitcases at an airport? I mean, every piece of the debunking that I read was almost with a sense of humor in some way, which I also
found. Well, I mean, isn't that
odd.
How they do everything? Like, if you mention anything connected to aliens, they play the X-Files music, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And they've actually, in some of the papers that have been released for Project Blue Book, say in there are notes to, you know, Heinrich and others saying the best way to debunk this is just to doubt the person believing it, you know, make them look
right.
Stupid. Don't even spend time proving it or disproving it. So I think that's a common distraction.
Yeah, and that's what
so,
you see. Let's talk about the
Leo
artwork.
Leo Tanguma
is
the one who did the murals. There's one that's called In Peace with Harmony in Nature. He's quoted as saying that he created it to depict a man-made environmental destruction and genocide, along with humanity coming together to heal nature and live in peace. The mural depicts a soldier that looks more like a monster with a large gas mask who is stabbing a dove with one hand, you know, and the dove is the symbol of peace, and holding an MK-47 rifle with the other hand. In his wake, he's emitting a trail of smoke that's killing women and children who are depicted weeping. Underneath the soldier, you can see children sleeping amid rubble and destruction. And this is one of the murals that was painted over. There's also a letter in the corner of this mural from a child who died at Auschwitz, which I just found odd. There's another one he painted called The Children of the World Dream of Peace. That one depicts a city being destroyed in the background. Children are weeping over three coffins. They say that the three women in the coffins depict an African woman, a Native American woman, and a young Jewish girl. I've read different things about the young girl. Is she Jewish? Is she Christian? Either way, she's a young girl. There's a woman holding a Mayan tablet, which gave a lot of people, you know, before 2012, lots to chew on. There's a duck and a bird encased in glass. They're being preserved. All the murals depict mass genocide, followed by a harmonious, less populated world under one government. The third mural shows children of the world turning over all of their weapons and their individual country flags to a boy holding a mallet. And he is then taking all of the weapons and turning them into something else, but it's unclear what. And there is a gravestone engraved with the words hate, violence, and war. And just as the first one had a letter, an actual letter from a child from the Holocaust, this one has a poem that's weird. It says, I once was a little child who longed for other worlds, but I am no more a little child, for I have known fear. I have learned to hate. How tragic then is youth which lives with enemies, with gallows rope. Yet I still believe I only sleep today and will wake up a child once more and start to laugh and play. And nobody knows who wrote that. The fourth mural looks like the Garden of Eden. There's animals, environments living in peace. There's a Jesus-like man with everyone running to him. It's supposed to be like the after this giant Holocaust and everything's been destroyed, there will be children again all running to this guy. I just think it's weird.
I just have to say this, as you're talking, and I'm looking at pictures of these murals, I'm thinking about other airports I've been in around America and in other countries, and you know, they have nice pictures of scenery from where you're going. You know, mm-hmm. like when you come to the airport where we live, there's beautiful pictures of our historic district and our beaches and what that this is. I mean, yes, no, I don't care how much of a whichever perspective you might have. These are not cheerful pictures in anybody's imagination that I could imagine. I really don't understand, and I think that's the bottom line for me in this whole show tonight, Samantha, is I don't understand why.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it.
Yep. Oh, and I found my notes. It was mentioned in Fortune magazine, all the land that she's buying in all different areas, and that was just one of them that was mentioned. The Queen.
Interesting.
Okay, let's take a quick break and talk about Audible, and then I will talk about some of the weirdnesses with the underground bunker.
Before you do that, can I just quote one thing here about the murals, and then we'll close out the murals. Conspiracy theorists focus only on the grim imagery, but not on the rainbow-laden resolution on the pictures. And the murals tell a hopeful story.
Hang on.
The murals tell a story of hopeful, story of peace and environmental stewardship following times of war and pollution. Now I'm with you. I don't get it either.
I don't get it, because doesn't good always follow bad? I mean, hello, we don't need a mural to tell us that. I mean, that's who we are as humans. We're resilient. We rebuild. We get up again. I mean, you know, Europe was devastated after World War II, and it's now more beautiful than ever. I mean, I don't get it. I mean, of course people are going to come together. And, you know, remember after 9/11, everybody came together and everybody was so nice and harmonious for about 8 months. I mean, that's what everyone does after times of disaster. But why we need four murals with these stark images of, you know, biochemical war and gas masks and Auschwitz and women in coffins and kids turning in weapons. It's just creepy.
It is creepy.
Okay.
Agreed. Okay.
Speaking
right,
of creepy,
Audible.
I have a creepy book to recommend for Audible. We are sponsored by Audible. If you go to audibletrial.com/psychicteachers, you can try Audible free for 1 month. This week, I am recommending Hunt for Skinwalker. Science confronts the unexplained at a remote ranch in Utah. This is a book about the bizarre events that have happened at that weird ranch called Skinwalker. And I think you and I have talked about this on the show before, but I thought since
we did
were
a whole
doing
show.
Creepy. Yeah. So I thought since we were doing creepy stuff, I'd mention a book on Audible about it. It's by Colm Kelleher, PhD. And it, how many hours is it? It's 8.5 hours.
I just have to tell you, you know, we have a wonderful listener who's been with us for many, many years who asked us to please never again do a show on the black-eyed children. And I promised him we would not. And I will tell you that I'm not doing another show on Skinwalker, because that story creeps me out more than anything else I've ever read. So if you like creepy stories, audibletrial.com/psychicteachers, the Hunt for the Skinwalker will get you to a creepy story. Woohoo!
See, I'm going to have to start a third podcast and just do my spooky stuff.
No, you don't have to do that. I'll do some spooky stuff with you. Like this Denver thing I'm happy to be doing with you. This is fun.
Okay.
It's weird, but it's
all right,
fun.
Well, let's talk about the bunker.
Okay.
So the bunker underneath the airport is said to be 360,000 square feet. It's said to be the world's largest underground bunker and system of tunnels. What we know is that five multi-storied buildings were built underground, but nobody knows why. There also seems to be a sprinkler system with no purpose under there. There are many locked doors throughout the airport that lead to these underground bunker. The airport officials have said that they are simply storage space, but when a couple, like I think one news reporter was able to go down there and there wasn't anything being stored, and they told her that it was mainly an easier, more efficient way to transfer baggages. So we don't know. There is a drawing of an alien on one of the underground walls, which is kind of weird. So there's just a lot that's unknown about these underground bunkers. The other weird thing is there's a barbed, the whole airport is surrounded by a barbed wire fence, right? But the barbed wire faces inside the airport, not outside, as though it's trying to keep things in. Hmm. The underground base, we know, is 88.5 miles long. 88.5 miles long. Imagine driving that. That's going to take you well over an hour and a half. Nobody needs that much storage.
Did you talk about the lizard people? Do you know about the lizard people, that reptile?
No, talk about the lizard people. I did not research
that's another thing that are said to be lurking down there, and they may be aliens, reptoids, lizard people. And these blurry, there's also blurry footage of lizard people that have appeared on conspiracy websites as well. So we have just the general concept of aliens, and like the picture that you're describing, where it's kind of that stereotypical alien sketch. There are also potentially lizard people and other kinds of aliens. So more than one kind of alien in that labyrinth of 88 miles of bunkers and whatnot underground.
Yeah, I don't believe it's for aliens at all. I really do think it's for the elite. It's for anyone who, you know, is, you know, if the Prime Minister of England needs a place to go if something hits the fan, or, you know, for anyone that needs a place. And it, to me, it's smart. Like, when I read about the Greenbrier bunkers, I was like, that's smart. We should have something like that. You know, we really should have a way to keep our leaders safe in the event of an emergency, because that's what we need. I just think it's strange that it's being kept hidden from us. There's also artwork in the airport itself, not in the underground bunker, like, you know, you can walk by and look at. And it shows like a cart, like a trolley. If you think about it, when I looked at it, it reminded me of, you know, the, what's that scene, Deb, from Harry Potter when he goes to see all the money underground?
No, he's in the money carts at Gringotts, the bank. Gringotts.
Yes, the Gringotts bank. That's what it reminded me of. It's one of those little carts. And on the cart is the symbol AUAG. Now, to me, I look at that and I think gold and silver. Okay, maybe this underground bunker is storing all of our gold and silver, because, you know, ever since gold was not, what's it called, standardized or something, you know, we're, you know, for example, before, when you held a dollar bill, it meant there was a dollar's worth of gold in Fort Knox, you know, and after Nixon, that's no longer the case. Money is just paper. But people have said maybe there is gold that's stored somewhere else that we don't know about. So I don't know. But the trolley has the symbols AU and AG, which, like I said, to me, makes me think of gold and silver. However, the AUAG sign could be more sinister. One of the people who founded the airport is a scientist who discovered AUAG, which is an Australian antigen. It's a lethal strain of hepatitis B, which could be used in a biochemical war. So who knows? Some other weird things that have been happening around the airport. In 2008, Denver Airport began a $13 million solar farm on 7.5 acres. It consisted of 92,000 panels that follow the sun and generate 3.4 million kilowatt hours of electricity per year. In 2009, they began a $7 million solar project on an additional 9 acres north of the airfield. In 2011, they bought 28 more acres. In 2014, they expanded this solar farm once again and are now the second largest solar array among U.S. airports, which I find it interesting. If it's true that this is going to be some type of a fallout shelter in the event of a disaster, we won't have power, so it would be important to have solar energy at that time, right? Which brings me back to, remember, it does have the fastest Wi-Fi of any airport in the world.
True.
Which is just interesting. There's something else weird. Where did I write that down? Oh, August 2017, they set aside $1.8 billion to renovate and make the airport more secure. So let's just think about that. It cost them over $4 billion to build it. Now they're talking about adding almost $2 billion to renovate it and make it more secure. That was approved in August of 2017. In November of 2016, $45 million was spent to add 26 more gates.
Wow. A lot of expansion.
Mm-hmm.
26 gates is a lot.
Yeah.
There are two other things I particularly want to be first to talk about, and that is the time capsule.
Yes.
That's on the property. And then, of course, the pattern of the runways.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Oh, do you want me to start?
I don't care.
Okay. So there's a dedication stone inside the airport The marker was mounted over a time capsule that is sealed and will not be opened until 2094. It is dated March 19th, 1994. A lot of people made a lot about that because if you add up 19 and 19 and 94, you get 33. So there's a lot of theory and conspiracy that this is connected to the Masons, 33 being an important number because that's the highest level a Mason can achieve. The capstone reads, "This dedication capstone was laid by the most worshipful Prince Hall Grand Lodge FNAM of Colorado in jurisdiction, Claude W. Gray Sr., Grand Master, and the most worshipful Grand Lodge of AFNAM of Colorado, Benjamin H. Bell Jr., Grand Master." I found that hilarious personally because how can they both be the most worshipful? But whatever. Underneath that, it says New World Airport Commission contributors. And again, if you remember me saying, nobody can find out who this New World Airport Commission is. Now, you can talk to airport people now, and they're like, oh, yeah, that was a committee that was established when the airport was being built. But if you ask them for dates and names of people, nothing is forthcoming. And then underneath that, it thanks the Martin and Mapietta Aeronautics Company, the Fentress Architects, and the Zimmerman Metal, the people who provided the steel. So the one main thing that people highlight on that capstone are, you know, is the fact that it thanks the New World Airport Commission and that it is over a capsule, a time capsule, that will not be opened for, you know, almost 100 years.
Be open in 2094.
Exactly 100 years when it was built.
Right. And what's in the capsule, which will be opened in 2094, are coins, a signed opening day ball from Coors Field, which of course is in Denver, Mayor Wellington Webb's sneakers, and a few Black Hawk casino tokens and some other items is all I was able to find about that. The New World Airport Commission was named by Charles Anschbacher, an arts advocate who died in 2010. The name is in reference to Dvorak's New World Symphony, and the commission was created only to orchestrate DIA's opening festivities. The strange markings are Navajo language characters and references to other airport artists. That's the debunking.
Mm-hmm.
Of the theory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting because I've never really given a lot of credit to this whole New World Order thing that gets floated around, even though, you know, you hear, I think President Bush said New World Order, you know, several times. You see quotes and things like that. But I've always thought, I don't know, that's a lot of work. We can't even get our government and our country to work together. I'm supposed to be worried about all the governments suddenly creating one New World Order. Like, I just can't see it. You know, my family can't even agree if we should have, you know, turkey or filet mm-hmm. for Thanksgiving. So I don't know. But it's weird that the capstone says New World Airport Commission, and then the murals depict exactly that. All, you know, all those children turning in all of their guns and their weapons and turning in their individual country flags to one boy representing, you know, one country. And he's dressed as a German boy. So people made a lot about that. You know, it looks like a New World Order thing. If you look at the Georgia Guidestones, for example, if you remember, Deb and I did a show on the Georgia Guidestones. I'll have to try to find that and do that for one of our Throwback Thursdays. Because one of the things that the Georgia Guidestone says is that, you know, society, the population needs to be limited to a really, really small number. And a lot of people have said that that's the goal of this, you know, New World Order is to create these, you know, these illnesses that will basically kill off people.
I can't even. I can't. You know, that whole New World Order thing. Some folks who, that whole notion of the apocalypse, I guess, is where I'm going here. And there's such fear over what's going to change in the world. And I remember my mother saying to me, you know, there's going to be one World Bank, and all of your, bank accounts will begin with 666. My mother, see your reaction to that? That was my reaction too. But she used to say that to me when I was a teenager. So, you know, this whole notion of this one world thing, it goes back, it has a fear piece to it that's been around for a very long time, you know?
I agree. It is very, very fear-based. Here are the 10 things on the Georgia Guidestones, just to kind of bring it together. It says maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely. Unite humanity with one living new language. Rule passion, faith, and tradition with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with laws and courts. Let all nations rule internally, resolving disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, and love, seeking harmony. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature. So those are on the Georgia Guidestones, which were commissioned by someone anonymously who gave his name as, what was it, like Chris, it was a play on words. It was like basically Chris Rosicrucian. So nobody knows who paid for it. Nobody knows, but it cost hundreds of thousands of dollars, and you can visit it outside of Atlanta. And it's one of the New World Order conspiracy things. And I just find it interesting that one of the things that always struck me from the Georgia Guidestones was that one of those rules, maintain humanity under 500 million. And then, you know, you read how, what was that quote? There's a quote that Prince Philip said, I'll try to Google it. He said, if I could come back as anything, I'd come back as a virus because we're too overpopulated.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell them about the what the runways look like.
Well, one theory, of course, is that the run. If you look at an aerial view of the runways, you can see a swastika, and that configuration is supposed to, of course, conceal symbols of Nazism or fascism. And any other number of sinister plots. And a tunnel is said to connect DIA to NORAD, which is nearly 100 miles to the south near Colorado Springs. And NORAD, of course, is a major, a lot of things happen in Colorado Springs with military kinds of things. So the theory is that Nazi infiltration into the construction of the airport, and that somehow or another that it's representative of this new world order. And here's an interesting quote from the woman who was at the time of this article, and I'm not sure whether or not she still is, the spokesperson for DIA. We do have some subject matter that we want it to either just avoid or tread very lightly with. She says in a response to a question about what made the cut for the exhibit that was on display last October in 2016 about the conspiracy theories, the DIA decided to just do a display throughout the airport that gave voice to the conspiracy theories. And her response was, we do have some subject matter that we wanted to either just avoid or tread very lightly with. Some things are worth debunking, others aren't.
Hmm.
Now, here's what
go ahead.
Here's what the Denver Post says about that paragraph. A close look at aerial photography of the supposedly swastika-shaped runways reveals a lumpy, misshapen, and largely interpretative swastika at best. The rotating fan-shaped design allows for optimal takeoff into and against the wind from different directions, depending on weather and traffic patterns. Additionally, a 90-mile-long tunnel from DIA's remote location to NORAD seems highly unlikely and cost prohibitive, given that the world's longest underground rail tunnel, the one in the Swiss Alps, is less than half that length and took more than a decade to excavate and construct. So what they're
cost
saying
cost prohibited.
Here,
this coming from somebody who went over $2 million over budget, $2 billion over budget.
$2 billion over budget. I know. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in logic, I will tell you that wind on the prairie out there is amazing, and I would think that there would need to be some kind of, and I don't know darn thing about aeronautics, but I know enough to know that you got to figure in wind direction in a place like DIA. So
mm-hmm.
I get that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've certainly flown in and out of there on some bumpy rides, you know. So that is something to consider. And once that wind comes down, there's a term for it, and I can't remember it, but once the wind comes down off of the mountains coming from the west and goes out into the prairie, it is a force to be reckoned with. So from a logical point of view, I get that notion of having different ways of getting planes out of there. Does it look like a swastika from the air? To me, it does, but that's just me. What do I know?
Yeah, it's just weird, all the Nazis. I mean, why have a letter from an actual child who died in Auschwitz in a mural in an airport? Why have a mural depicting all these children turning in their weapons and their country's flags to a little German boy? And then why have runways that seem to be in the shape of a swastika? I mean, it's just weird. What's with all the German references?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. And certainly
not.
And
I would love to talk to one of your friends, you know, that you know, who know different languages, to see if the other weird plaques throughout the airport really are, you know, what did it say? It was from the Navajo language?
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way,
yeah.
isn't Navajo. The correct term is Diné. The Diné people don't call themselves Navajo.
Isn't Navajo kind of like not a good thing? It's like a
right.
That Sioux. Okay.
Neither is okay.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Navajo people are Diné.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, I can certainly, if I can find the words and get the spelling right, I can certainly call my friend who is Diné and ask her about them. She speaks fluent Diné.
I mean, I think it'd be interesting to see if it's true. Okay, so that quote real quick by Prince Philip I was mentioning before, it says, if I were reincarnated, I would wish to be returned to Earth as a killer virus to lower human population levels. Kind of a weird wish to have, but
yeah,
there you have it.
Right.
The other weird thing I found out that was in 2010, trying to find my notes where I wrote that down, a 7-ton statue of the Egyptian god of the dead was erected in front of the airport, that Egyptian god Anubis, who's the god of death, he was constructed to welcome the King Tut exhibit at the Denver Art Museum. I just found that weird, because if you're going to erect a 7-ton statue of an Egyptian god to commemorate an exhibit that's traveling to the Denver Art Museum, why wouldn't you put the 7-ton statue of the God of the Dead in front of the Denver Art Museum? Why put it at the International Airport 25 miles away?
Why put a statue of the God of Death anywhere?
Right. Why not put King Tut? I don't know. I just thought that was weird.
Yeah. I'd love to be able to know. I think, you know, Well, like I said earlier, I came away from this research and with a lot of questions, way more questions than certainly I think any of us have answers. But what was the logic behind this? What even if you, let's just say worst case scenario here, at least in my opinion, of you really did want to stir up fear and anxiety among people who are already nervous as the dickens walking down an airport concourse anyway. If that really was your intent, why, what was the reason behind what was chosen, like these murals, like the gargoyles that are not cheerful looking? I mean, why do this in a place that mm-hmm. is already anxiety laden for many mm-hmm. folks anyway?
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think it's pure genius to build an underground bunker. I think that's smart. I think it's forward thinking. I think it's pure genius to build it underneath one of the world's largest airports. I mean, I think that's just, it's so smart. It's kind of scary in and of itself. And I don't think any of us would have been any the wiser or thought anything of it. Oh, they buried 5 multi-level buildings underground. All right, that's a little weird, but whatever. I think we would have just moved on with our lives. But when you add the demon-eyed giant blue Mustang out front, you add these creepy murals, you add these weird symbols, you add these gargoyles, you add all this weirdness inside of the airport, you're going to get questions. So I just think they were, like so many sinister people, they were so smart until they weren't,
And when I still have this image of my first visit to this airport and how clean and crisp and clear and simple the actual architecture itself is. Mm-hmm. And how absolutely beautiful that it mirrors those amazing, amazing mountains behind it. I remember saying when I got there, this really does look like all the pictures you've seen of the Rocky Mountains that I always thought were fake. I didn't believe it really looked like this, and it does. And the airport mirrors that in this beautiful way. And you would never guess that inside was all this stuff that was not careful. I just don't even know what else to say about it, but just how bizarre it is, I guess.
Well, and a lot of people think that it was built as a holding center after like a FEMA disaster, right? Like, let's say there is some type of biological warfare that they could house millions of people underneath here to keep us safe. Which, that's super nice. But then you think about the barbed wire fence that's facing in, not out. What's up with that?
Yeah. Or how do you get to it, how do you get chosen to be one of the people who's housed at DIA in that event,
right?
Right. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
I'm sorry that we aren't answering more questions for you all, but hopefully we gave you something really interesting to think about and to discuss. And here's an idea for you all. If you're sitting at the dinner table and your uncle brings up, that he loves the president, and your cousin brings up that he hates the president, and a fight is about to erupt, you can say, "Hey, did you all hear about the Denver International Airport?" And everyone's going to stop and go, "What the heck is she talking about?" And you can totally diffuse a situation this Thanksgiving, thanks to the psychic teachers. How about that?
And on that cheerful note, as we leave you tonight, we hope you have enjoyed contemplating and this mystery with us. And we appreciate you listening. And we're out of time. Samantha, tell them what to do.
Have a great week, everybody, and a wonderful holiday week if you are celebrating. And in the meantime, be the light.
Take care, everyone.
Good night.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.